59 million people in the world are injured, seriously injured or disabled by collisions on the road. Driving is dangerous. And today we're going to talk all about driver safety with our guest. Let's get into the podcast.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety does exactly what it says on the tin. We're here to challenge those over-the-top practices and change the perception of health and safety. And we do that by providing long-form conversations on this podcast and how-to videos, tips and tricks, keynotes, vlogs, etc. over on the YouTube channel. So if you're new here, hit the subscribe button and the bell so you never miss another episode. It goes bing when I bring it up. Or if you're on Spotify, hit the follow button, turn your notifications on so it goes bing. Just like that. See that? I timed that well. That didn't really. I forgot to put my phone on silent. My apologies. Anyway, today's guest name is Alex Hawes, and he works for a company called Bright Mile. And they are quite an innovative app, essentially, helping companies and drivers be better drivers. Using gamification, getting rid of all that kind of spy technology stuff where we all think they're doing it just to watch us. He's quite a lovely bloke as well. I had quite a lot of conversations with this bloke just around. Yeah, I think now we did like this little intro chat with people sometimes just to make people feel comfortable. And this one went on for like ages. Just a really nice bloke. So we're going to chat all about driver safety. He's going to blow our minds with some statistics like driver safety is second only to deep sea fishing when it comes to dangerous driving. That's if you drive over 25,000 miles or something like that. I'll let him do the statistics and tell you all about his app, and we'll have a good old chat about driver safety and what we need to be better drivers. And as a cyclist, you know, it would be really nice if we could all just get a little bit better at it. Anyway, let's go. I think you're right, mate. I think as a safety professional, not even just safety professional, any kind of leader or in a business, you know, this is just a true challenge. And if you're that kind of person that loves a challenge, like this is, you know, you got to take positives from things like this, because if you don't, you would just be miserable, wouldn't you? So for me, I thrive off of stuff. I had a couple of like connections on LinkedIn, and so like can talk to them and say, how are you doing? And they say like, oh, you know, it's all a bit much and I'm a bit busy. And, you know, I'm like you say, I'm in 18 hour war rooms and stuff like this. And they're complaining about it. And I'm like, God, don't complain. But you're part of something amazing. Imagine being able to talk about this when you're older to your grandkids. Exactly. Like, you know, what were you doing during coronavirus? Sitting at home, you know, and I mean, no disrespect to anyone that is sitting at home. We don't, you know, a lot of this stuff's taken out of our control. You know, yeah. Sitting at home playing on the PlayStation, which a lot of us will do, and it's a good thing to do. But some people will thrive off of being working for those essential services. You know, I was listening to a podcast this morning about care homes, and I just think, like, as much as it would be a horrible time to be in working in care, it would also be, if you're that way inclined, an amazing time to be working in care. Because, you know, if you're a safety professional, you've got to think, how can I get people, my staff, to deliver care, do what they need to do, without the protection and the mitigations that they need to have to do what they need to do, but yet they're still going to do what they need to do. It's like this huge dilemma.
Of course, how do I keep my staff healthy? How do I keep the virus out? How do I keep these very, very, very vulnerable people who are at a, you know, critical stages in their lives that have all sorts of underlying conditions as well? How do we keep them safe? Mm. And the other big challenge is obviously in care is the fact that you're seeing these amazing care homes around the country that have got brilliant rehabilitation facilities, lots of things to stimulate the people that live in these homes as well. but they're none of those things are being used. People are isolated in their rooms, and and unfortunately, it's the right thing to be doing under these circumstances, but that's part of the deterioration for these for these people in the care homes, because they're not because they're just being kept in their rooms as well, and they're not kind of, whether that's a stimulation of talking to other people, whether that's doing a routine that you've got used to, all of those things have been taken away as a result of wanting to obviously protect these people as well. So if you've got, you know, I don't know whether it's dementia or any other kind of underlying, there's certain things that are absolutely essential in terms of helping you and supporting you. And imagine the nurse that you love, or the care home personnel that you love, who's turning up with their face covered, turning up with a face mask on, and that kind of, for some of them, that crucial human connection being removed as well, or your loved ones that you expect to see once a week or so, standing behind a pane of glass at best as well. You're absolutely right. But I can understand I have friends who always talk about you should never get emotionally invested in your business, but you don't become a nurse, a doctor, you don't become a care home personnel if you're not that way inclined. So when we see people who are absolutely spent talking about losing loved ones, losing people they genuinely care for, I can only start, you know, imagine just how horrible that must be.
No, it's actually, I can only hope that, you know, it reflects later on outside of coronavirus, and we all start to realize that these people that, you know, I hold my hands up as a kind of younger man. I was one of those people that kind of looked down on jobs like care and bin collecting and you know, electricians, and now as you grow older, you start to appreciate that stuff. But even though you appreciate, you probably don't fully appreciate it until you have something like this, where you just think, wow, these people that consistently get paid the least in society are currently the people keeping us going. And it's just like, wow.
Yeah, what are the genuinely essential jobs in a time like this? What are the jobs, the delivery guy that's bringing your supermarket shopping to your door, the council bin collection guys who are ensuring, you know, as the weather gets warmer, that your rubbish gets picked up, all of this stuff that's just and the amazing way that humans adapt as well. It's the Uber driver who's pivoted to doing your essential deliveries for you now as well. It's a delivery driver who's bringing your essentials today as well. It's those kind of, yeah. And we're grateful for those people. And will things change? Will it mean that these people, like, as you said, you know, care home personnel, those people that are traditionally in some of the worst paid jobs as well, but they're jobs that we are seeing today just how essential those jobs are. And it'll be really interesting post COVID when the dust settles, in terms of what will this mean to society, how will we see these things. And even I had a friend who was a supermarket lifer, and 7 months ago he said, look, retail's dead, got to get out of retail, god, you know, need to move on to something else. Well, you don't feel that way right now, do you? I've got friends working at a place like Sainsbury's and Waitrose, and the work that they're putting in, you know, traditionally a head of marketing person who is now in a war room just going, you know, how do we get more drivers, how do we get more people, how do we keep our supply chain going? Wow. What really matters, eh? Yeah,
exactly. Opens our eyes, doesn't it? And
it really does.
How are you, Adam, and your family? Everyone's okay?
Yeah, you know what? I'd under these circumstances, as well as you can be, I find it just we become we become self-consumed. You know, oh, going a bit stir crazy after 4 weeks. Really not that bad. I've got, you know, I was talking to one of my customers who lives alone, and he was going, I think I'm doing well, but there's no one to tell me if I'm going slightly crazy in my own company as well. Well, I've got three young kids and my wife, and the new normal's funny, isn't it? It was, I was having a call with GE Aviation, and it was our first ever kind of introduction to Bright Mile and driver safety. And my kids now love coming in, bombing each one of my calls. And all they do is they stand behind me and stick their tongue out. But the thing is, people love it. People like, it's just now become a part of the thing. I just had this conversation with this guy, and this cute little 6-year-old and 4-year-old came along till they lost interest for 2 minutes. So yeah, it's as good as it can be. And you're well, your wife's well, yes, everyone. Yeah,
we're good, thank you. Like you say, you do become a bit self-involved, don't you? And you think that your situation is worse than everyone else. And you know, so I would probably say last week I probably was like proper like bummed out about it, and my wife went to the 20-week scan and I wasn't allowed to go, and I was like, oh, proper bummed out. And you know, you can kind of sit back now and look at it and think, you know, it's not that bad, is it? Like, it is a bit annoying that I don't get to go to the scan of my first baby, but you know,
yeah,
whatever, my baby is okay, the wife's okay, the dog's amazing, okay, you know, growing well, so
amazing, and the weather's nice outside, and you can get on your bike when you need to. That's it. Saturday we were supposed to be flying to Mallorca for a week away for the Easter holidays. So Saturday there was a moment I was like, oh, we could have been on a beach now. It's like, what first world problems I'm discussing right now? It's just, you want to give yourself a slap and go, kind of pull yourself together, man. You know, it's just kind of is that your biggest problem at this particular moment in time? But yeah, I've been finding myself having a word with myself as well to say, look, you know, kind of have some perspective, because you know, the daily COVID briefings, and especially when it's not impacting you on a direct basis, whether it's, you know, long may it stay this way, it's not my my close family, my relatives, everyone's well. So in terms of having a close secondhand experience of someone who's really suffering as a result of COVID, at the moment it's, you know, it's numbers, isn't it? Incredibly scary numbers. It's overwhelming numbers, whether that's the UK numbers that we see, the global numbers that we see being told, and it's kind of similar. It's the biggest problem with news. We become desensitized to it over a period of time as well. And it's just remembering the unbelievable sacrifices that are people making. And really, me being at my comfortable home with my lovely family, with all my, you know, all my creature comforts, and being able to still go out for a daily walk, honestly, really, this isn't bad.
No.
I've got nothing to complain about.
Me too. So let's actually introduce you, Adam. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Why don't you give us a quick introduction to yourself and Bright Mile as well, and then we're going to get into driver safety.
Yeah, really looking forward to talking about this, and following our previous discussion as well. I'll kind of very, very quick summary of me. I'm after working in a variety of different sectors after graduating from university, I've been a serial entrepreneur, or let's say I caught the startup bug, and I've been involved in a variety of different businesses where some of them are kind of, you know, have, I'd like to call them my expensive MBAs, have not succeeded. Some of them have been turned into genuine businesses employing lots of people, and this what Bright Mile is the most recent project that I've had the pleasure of getting involved in with an amazing team as well. And you only have these kind of weird oxymorons in startups. I blame Silicon Valley for it. I'm what you call in Bright Mile a late co-founder. I mean, there can't be a greater oxymoron. So, or what my co-founders would endearingly call me, a startup goal hanger. So they've had 2 and a bit years of building a brilliant product, and then they've kind of said, right, we need to now build the commercial function. Adam, can you come along and kind of obviously help us commercialize this? I saw what the amazing product they were. Of course, yeah, absolutely, would be my pleasure. So yeah, having and now very much in for having originally worked in an advisory capacity, and since the end of 2019, beginning of 2020, been full time in Brightmile and working in driver safety and kind of mobility as well. And in terms of what Brightmile is, I'll give you the kind of I quite like doing it this way, which is giving you the bombastic statement of what Brightmile is and then telling you what I tell my mum, which is and so it kind of the marketing spiel is and we believe we built the simplest and the fastest way to improve driver safety and reduce business risk in businesses, and the kind of the big things are no hardware, really easy setup, no upfront costs. What our technology does is it genuinely engages drivers, empowers companies to improve safety and reduce fleet costs as well. And we believe we built the kind of the first app that genuinely engages company drivers to drive safely and take better care of their vehicles, and a web portal giving managers actionable insights on how to reduce collisions and manage the duty of care for driver towards their drivers as well. Now you might say, okay, that sounds great, can you dumb this down for me?
Yeah, what do you tell your mum? That's what we want.
What do I tell my mum? Exactly. And that is where I talk about is, look, mum, you've got a Fitbit around your wrist. Imagine having a Fitbit for your driving, and but without there being any kind of hardware required. So as long as you've got your phone with you, so you can assess how well you're driving. So drivers can observe their performance, take action, and make themselves safer drivers in terms of, oh, looks like I'm speeding too much, looks like I'm driving too long without taking brakes. And but also the real kind of I'd say the most important parts of the things that we borrowed from the app generation are kind of the positive, the gamification, the rewards, and a really rewarding good driving as well, which has been, I'd say, really taking a carrot approach to driver behavior change as well. And if they don't take the necessary actions, we also have a portal where a manager could step in to help them reduce their risk with information we give them as well and insights we give them as well. So that's how I explain it to my mom. Goes, oh, that's pretty nice. Can I use it then? I was like, yeah, why not, mum? You're more than welcome to.
So would you say like some of these, so you've got like obviously that kind of startup bug, so you've got a passion for startups obviously, which I think is something that is quite, it seems to be natural in those kind of people that like doing that. So it seems to be, like you say, a bug. It's probably the best way to describe it, actually, a bug. But like as for kind of a passion for driver safety, do you think, obviously, would you admit maybe that you took it, you didn't really think about it until you started at Brightmile, or was that always there, or did it grow when you started at Brightmile? You're thinking, oh crap, I'm actually a really bad driver, and I
yeah. Where did the passion come from? Really, really interesting. You talk about this, which is obviously I've once again, I've got my my personal bias. I believe I'm a very safe driver, and I have obviously 3 very demanding passengers in the back of my car. You know, the moment you have a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old, you really do start thinking about, you know, I have my duty of care. So driving is something I have to do. We regularly have that conversation. Living in London and working in London, my wife and I regularly have that conversation, go, do we need a car? Mm. With a young family, we certainly do. I don't have to do only a couple of times a month will have to maybe do some driving for work, going out to visit a customer in, I don't know, Hemel Hempstead, where it makes a great deal more sense than obviously taking public transport for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. With where I live. But yeah, but it's interesting. It's kind of like mobility and driving has been kind of in my family for a while, did I think about driver safety, and did I think I would be working on it? Well, till my co-founders start really talking about the subject, and actually they're the several of my co-founders who've been working in I'd say mobility, telematics, driver training for well over a decade. They're the people who kind of obviously have been educating me in terms of like what is the challenge that's being faced by businesses, and I think they've played a big part in me understanding and also understanding the challenge that we have and getting me really passionate about this, and obviously bringing me on board and going, yes, this is a I believe in with every business I've worked in, I talk about, you know, we need to be a purpose-driven business, purpose for actually having a clear mission, having clear values with a business is the only way that we can really transcend the ego of I just want to build a big business. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been incredibly important. For me to become involved in any business, I genuinely have to believe in the cause that we're all getting behind, something that we can align the whole team around. And when, you know, when we're interviewing someone to join our business, again, no, this is the mission that we're on. Now, it's not quite Elon Musk. We're going to, you know, come and join SpaceX. We're going to become interplanetary species. And our mission statement is, saving the planet. But, you know, I still think in our making work-related driving safer and cheaper is when you see the kind of the stats is incredible. There's a huge, huge opportunity of here in terms of kind of saving lives as well.
A statistic, you mentioned stats there, and that's quite a good point, because that's something I was shocked to see when I saw some of the statistics. They're like, would you kind of do us a favor, maybe pick out one of those, a couple of the ones you think would be the most impactful?
Yeah.
I remember when I saw some of them, I was like, damn.
That's it. I think there's a bit, a few big statements. The one other thing I wanted to do for you was kind of talk about the things that really kind of get us out of bed and really motivate us as well, and I'll come to the stats as well, and this is kind of the stats will back up a few of these as well, which is obviously we talk about this statement when you see the stats. Work-related driving is still one of the biggest unmanaged risks faced by companies today. And as I said, based on riding on the shoulders of my much more experienced co-founders, there was a real sense that the existing solutions have been insufficient in genuinely changing driver behavior to improve driver safety. And the things that we've been extremely passionate about from day one has been to make safety and risk about driver rather than the fleet or the vehicle. So most organizations talk about fleet risk programs or fleet safety, and I think there's a big, big challenge in terms of making this about the person as opposed to about the vehicle as well. So trying to change the language being used as well, and that's going to be a big challenge. And ensure we provide a solution that provides value to the driver and rewards good driving. So the kind of the carrot rather than the stick approach has always been one of the things that we spoke about. Like, how do we take some of the best things that we love so much about, like the consumer products that we have, and why can't we bring some of that into a business application and provide something that genuinely provides value as opposed to scares the bejesus out of an employee and thinks I'm being monitored at the moment, so I should be on my best behavior as well. Ensure we develop a solution that can be used by everyone who has to drive for work and to work. And we kind of like, companies have been traditionally quite myopic in terms of here's the cars, the vehicles that we own, or here's the vehicles that we lease, versus all of those people that might be driving their own personal cars, or, you know, what we refer to as gray fleet. And the other thing I'd say that's really been important as well is in this kind of in the post GDPR era is kind of coming up with a solution that genuinely respects the privacy and making privacy a key design feature, which also means sometimes giving drivers a great deal more control than what businesses are used to, and staying strong to our founding principles and, for example, never reporting on driver location, and which also means at times having to say no to businesses as saying, no, that's not, we're not the solution for you if you're looking for a track and chase solution. Mm. And why have these things been so important? I rely on for people like British Safety Council, RSPA, some amazing organization, BREAK, and people like World Health Organization have done some phenomenal work around this as well in terms of obviously kind of benchmarking it. And as a, in the UK, we have some of the safest roads in the world. But so there's some of the stats in the UK still staggering in terms of, and I'll, but first I just want to kind of go, let's go big, let's go world. And driving is, according to the British Safety Council, is still one of the most dangerous work activities that most people do. Is potentially the most dangerous work activity that most people do. Some World Health Organization stats recently pointed out that work-related driving still staggers, accounts for a staggering 450,000 fatalities and I think 20 million injuries on the world's roads each year, which is, once again, those kind of numbers that are just so big that you just kind of, well, you must go, well, that must be mostly developing world. And, you know, we've got safe roads here in the UK and Europe. But then you go, well, there was actually another WHO piece, which was the World Report on Road Traffic Injury Prevention, which looked at the US, Australia, and EU. And according to them, work-related motor vehicle accidents are estimated to contribute at least one quarter to over one third of all work-related deaths. All work-related deaths as well. And suddenly when I talk about, you know, going back to that statement of like the biggest unmanaged risk, we've got a big job to do here in terms of still making our employees safer and to make driving safer and to help drivers become safer drivers as well.
So much to this, but there is, so I think as a kind of safety professional that's managed kind of mobile workers, as we might call them, people that drive regularly for work, it just seems, in my opinion, sometimes you feel like as in the business that it's just too big of a thing to deal with, and the only kind of obvious stuff previously to me kind of stumbling across something like this was, well, we can go with a black box kind of solution, or we don't really like the black box, so what else can we do? All right, we'll get them to do some advanced driver training, and then after that we'll put a daily check in their car. Now let's be honest, I'm a safety professional and I don't daily check my car. I don't weekly check my car. I don't monthly check my car. I do an MOT and a service the same as everybody else. And I might every now and then go, my tires look a bit bare or whatever, and then have a look. And you maybe have a look when you blow your tires up or something like that. And let's be honest, most new cars probably do a lot of that stuff for us, don't they? I don't know what your kind of opinion on that, but sometimes this just looks too big of a beast for a business to handle when they're trying to handle so much more other stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And it's a case of like, the analogy I sometimes use, if you are at that place where you go, we do some driver license checks when someone joins our organization, we get someone on a defensive driver training course, we provide them with our policy document, and we also say you should be checking your vehicle regularly. And every so often there might be some additional driver training as well. And we look at, you know, at fault collision or some insurance data. And you're right, that is, I'd say, and a lot of organizations, that anything beyond that kind of can sometimes feel a bit too big. And the other dirty secret of our, unfortunately, of our industry is the fact that yes I might go out there and install some telematics and dash cams and that kind of stuff, which will help reduce maybe my insurance premiums as well, so win-win in terms of and I might even get a bursary to do some of that stuff as well, but do I then use that data to make decisions. I think there's something like 80 to 90% of driving related data that never gets, it's in the non-urgent important column of stuff for us going, yeah, we need to do something with this, but when have I got time in comparison to all the other burning fires which I'm having to deal with? And when you look at the whole thing, you go, right, yeah, there's a to kind of have a fully fledged driver safety program with every other element as well beyond what we're doing, seems like quite a big task in terms of everything else I do. But I personally don't think it has to be. And I think I use the kind of like climbing Everest kind of analogy, which is like, you've got to think about those base camps. Like, this is what you're doing. So this is the benchmark of what you're doing. What's the next iteration? What's the next improvement? What's the next addition that could move the needle in terms of making your drivers safer? And what's going to, of all the different options that you have, what's going to have in your, based on the profile of your drivers, the kind of mileage that they might do, let's say, are they mostly light commercial vehicles? Are they mostly company cars, passenger cars that people drive? What's going to have the biggest impact in terms of kind of making your drivers safer as well? And I think there'll be a variety of different solutions. So kind of iterating on it, and also then somehow making the time to go, right, what's been the effect, measuring the effectiveness of any of these programs. I think that's really, really hard in terms of kind of being able to making sure you've got the systems and the programs in place to go, yeah, that's had a positive impact as well. I think it's a case of when it feels too big for a business, there's also a case of, I worry that there's sometimes a bit of a tap out there, you know, which is a case of actually making roads safer is much bigger than the business. And I think it's all about focusing on the aspects that a business can control as well, and reducing the risk in these areas. And whether that's, it's, you know, things that we've discussed, but beyond this, business can also engage with some amazing charities, bodies, to be a part of the bigger conversation around things that, like, you know, government policy, infrastructure, investment, but also in terms of like, what's the thing that they can control on a day-to-day basis, and can they make those people safer? So it's just the stat that you and I spoke about, which is, I think driving 25,000 miles a year is the third most dangerous business activity after deep sea fishing and coal mining, I believe, according to the RSPA. And I think we just kind of like, when you talk about like, this is what we do and this is what most businesses do, well, my challenge is we have to do more.
And let's be honest, there's probably a TV show on Discovery Channel about deep sea fishing and coal mining, but there's nothing on driving over 25,000 miles, is there?
It's just not sexy. Yeah.
There's a couple of things you said there, and I wanted to jump on. And I just had one on the tip of my tongue, and it's gone, and it was really bloody good. What was it?
It'll come back to you.
Yeah, hopefully it will. It's kind of when you, the thing you said about like businesses feel like it's not something, it's too big for their business, not something they should be doing. Maybe like you implied, maybe that's something that local government should do, or even the national government should do.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the podcast we've actually released today, a gentleman on the panel that we've been doing recently for the kind of the COVID discussions.
Yeah, I've heard them.
Oh, good. And I'm glad someone's listening. It was interesting because he said that he was speaking to somebody and they said that we still live in a socialist society to a point in which we all have the mindset that the government will sort it. So we all still think, don't worry about that, the government will sort it. And this kind of brought that to light. And actually, and I think that is very similar to kind of road safety, in that from a business point of view, we think, well, we don't own the road, so the government will sort it. And it's very similar argument to a lot of things, say for environment, I think is very similar, like the big corporations or sort of, et cetera, it's not our problem. But can we imagine if every single person decided after listening to this podcast, for example, let's say this tomorrow becomes the most popular podcast and every single person on the planet listens to it, and they all think the next day, I'm just going to drive that little bit safer.
I'm going to slow down a little bit more. I'm going to be a little bit more empathetic, a little bit more understanding when I'm driving. We would just solve our problem tomorrow, and driving would automatically be a much safer thing.
I think the empathy side is, you're so right about that as well. And that's empathy to not just to other drivers, but empathy to everyone that's using the roads, or let's say, there's a couple of things. I think a lack of empathy whilst driving to other drivers and use the road is a huge issue. And I think, come back to the saying that we have heard many times recently, and I never get tired of repeating it, which is a case of be kind and reserve judgment on others as well. Kind of like, let that anger subside. And I think there's a couple of other things I get on my soapbox about a fair bit, which is the vast majority of us believe that we're better drivers than we are, which is that kind of that bias that we have. I'm a very safe driver. I'm a very good driver. There's some ridiculous, once again, research and statistics. I think there was some staggering number of US drivers who still believe that they're better than an average driver whilst texting and emailing on their phones as well, which is just crazy. And I think the other thing that the modern driver now has, especially in this COVID world, if you think about it, the number of distractions and the sensory overload that we can now have when driving is something we just need to be continuously aware of. I had to do an emergency journey yesterday, which is my one drive of having to drop something off for family members. And on my way back, I thought I'd give my dad a call. And that's a, you know, just even having a conversation, how are you, dad? And I missed some road signage on the A13. I missed the fact that it went from 50 to 40 briefly. It was just, and that's significant. And that's just that, that's me doing something which is not, once again, a huge, let's not go into the whole kind of the distraction of hands-free kits, phone conversations, what should you listen to, which is actually beneficial to your focus and your driving versus, but if you think about this particular moment in time, how many times is your phone a day currently buzzing? How consumed is your mind at the moment with everything that's going on in terms of taking from job security to the well-being of others? And think about all those people that are having to drive right now. And also, once again, a lack of empathy. Some of the things that we're hearing in this COVID world where, I don't know, someone clocking 150 miles an hour on the M1 just because the roads are empty. I mean, stay home. You know, protect the NHS and protect others. Don't be a boy racer, which might end up in actually a crash, an accident. Can you imagine that you actually become a burden on the health services in these times as a result of some ridiculously rash decision that you've taken? Speeding, you know, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of things. There's one other thing I'm going to mention, which is I'd say the definition of good driving is something that is not consistent. As I said, there are people in the US who believe they are still good drivers whilst texting, and the fact that they can, or the act of being able to multitask whilst driving. Jesus Christ, I mean, talk about an act where there shouldn't be any multitasking, where you should have your, one of the most dangerous things that you do, where you should have the greatest degree of focus on what you're doing as well. So yeah, a lot to be done.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a shameless sponsorship clip. In all seriousness, guys, we partnered up with DRM Group. You know, David McLean's been on the podcast time and time again. We absolutely support his message, and he's got a brand new online course to help you. I'm going to let him tell you all about it now.
The brain can be trained to think and behave differently, to think in more positive and optimistic ways. And there are steps that you can take to train your brain to feel good for good. And we call this lasting positive change. Through our 16-day program, which includes daily videos and action sheets, taking you no longer than 15 minutes to complete a day, you will learn how to move away from thoughts of anger, hopelessness, and frustration to a place of mental well-being and positivity.
Lucky guys. So if you're interested, you can click the link below and get a discount, special rebranding safety discount. Full disclosure, we get a little bit kickback from that. So at the same time as improving your mental health, you can support your favorite health and safety podcast and YouTube channel. I'll let you get back into the content.
I remember having a conversation with somebody who was having the same argument. So basically, it was just a manager who openly admitted to me that they email whilst driving and stuff like that. So I know, like, I'm just really good at multitasking. So, and I can't remember what I did, but I did something around the lines of, what, pat your head and rub your belly. Yeah. So pat your head and rub your belly. A lot of people struggle with that. So he's got that. Right. And then I said, right, now I want you to sing this song, for example, or read out this letter whilst you're doing that. And he like really struggled. And I said, well, that's multitasking. So you patting your head and rubbing your belly is already multitasking. So that's you driving a car. So when you're driving a car, your eyes are looking at one thing, your hands are doing another thing, and your feet are doing another thing. And even you have one hand on the steering wheel, one hand on the gear stick, one foot on the clutch, one foot on the accelerator slash and what the brake, whatever we're doing. And your eyes are looking at roads. You're already multitasking, like by what, five different points, and then you expect yourself to be able to text as well, and email this gentleman in particular. And we just had a conversation. I don't know whether it made much of a difference to him, but it was just this over a coffee lunch, basically. I mean, we were just having a chit chat. But I do think there's a couple of things that I think I realized when I was doing my diploma was, because insurance is mandatory as a driver, you actually have a higher level duty of care under civil law. So I cycle quite a lot. All the drivers will be like, this is why he's talking about driver safety, because he's a cyclist. And I always think, like, when I'm out driving, to be honest, a lot of people do give cyclists a lot of space and they overtake quite well, etc. But sometimes you just get that one guy who gives you like less than a meter and just goes vroom, straight past. Now I'm hard of hearing, I'm pretty much deaf, so when I'm cycling I can't hear a thing. So I just put my headphones in because I can't hear anyway, so I just think whatever, put my headphones in. Now that's debatable. I think some people would massively agree with me on that, and that's fine. But sometimes I think, do you know what, it doesn't, anyone that cycles or even learns to cycle on a road, clipped into your pedals, going up a big hill or something like that, it doesn't take much for a gust of wind to put you off of that course that you're on, or for you to get absolutely knackered and just steer into the road accidentally, look over your shoulder, steer into the road accidentally. And I just think, do you know what, forget, if you haven't got any empathy for hitting me and you know, taking me away from my family, then that's fine. But just remember that if you do hit me, my family's going to sue the shit out of you. Like, because you automatically have a higher duty of care because insurance is mandatory. You will never win that case. No matter what me as a cyclist or a pedestrian do, you'll never win that case. And I just think people just need to... And I do it as well. You get stuck in your world when you're driving your car. You forget about everything else, and your car is your little world. And I do think that it's easy to lose that empathy and understanding for other people. We've got to ground ourselves, and that's hard, but we've got to do it.
So bringing it back to once again in terms of you were talking about the, obviously, from hopefully at the, for those people that my lack a bit of empathy might think I don't want a dent in my car, or I don't want to find myself in you're right, you know, the kind of the insurance side of things that we should hopefully act as for those people that might not, you know, have the same level of compassion for the other users of your roads, might be something that helps ground them in terms of going, I don't want this court case or this kind of this bill or whatever it is as well. But there's one other thing that's worth mentioning there, which is a case of that doesn't just stop with the driver now as well. And I wanted to bring it back to businesses. There was a recent court case where there was a fatality on the roads in the US, where an employee who was driving on company time, driving for the business, who the fatality was caused as a result of him actually texting whilst he was driving. That led to a $20 million fine for the business. Mm-hmm. So it's once again, it's talking about, yeah, what are the things that motivates a business to educate and invest in obviously driver safety programs. I hope it's a case of it's a duty of care for their employees. I hope it's a motivation to ensure that their workforce will get home to their loved ones safely. I hope it's a duty of care for everyone that their employees interacts with. But obviously, if you need an additional bump, excuse the pun, but it might be those kind of, it's that potential commercial cost as well. And the numbers and the kind of the commercial cost for businesses is staggering. Seeing we spoke about those kind of numbers of like, what does this mean in terms of all the hidden costs around for businesses, whether that's insurance claims, everything else. How does that kind of I think it was globally the annual cost of traffic collisions to companies is somewhere in the region of $370 billion. And that's everything from, you know, insurance, fuel, repairs, maintenance, absenteeism, injury costs, employee downtime, and obviously the legal liability for the actions of employees who are driving for work, which is the, you know, the, i.e. the $20 million fine example, which we were talking about.
That is interesting. What is it? I wanted to kind of just briefly like come as we kind of near to the end, kind of really focus in on what makes Bright Mile that little bit different from what everyone else is doing. And when we previously spoke, you were quite obviously passionate about avoiding that big brother mentality, and also we could tell from your kind of introduction and it to Bright Mile is making it personal about the driver as well, being a bit more, having a bit more personality to it, I suppose, bringing it to about, it's about me, it's not about the fleet and the business. Do you want to kind of just briefly touch on those two and just like how do you stop that big brother mentality and how do you make it personal?
I'd say it's a hard challenge because I think every single business driver starts from who's been driving for some time starts from a position of suspicion the moment you go, why do you want me to download this app on my phone? Why do you want me to use this? It's really is one of the biggest things that we need to overcome with any business driver who has an experience of having a black box or, you know, a driver facing dash cam or some kind of hardware that very much focuses on track and trace first and perhaps safety second. So we have to deal with what we're not head on when introducing Bright Mile for the first time to employees. And, you know, just, I talk about the simplicity of deployment of Bright Mile because it's an app that you download from the App Store and you set up in seconds and we start auto-detecting the trips as well. I mean, it really is the quickest way for you to get something that is helping monitor how well you're driving and then give you feedback on based on that on things that you can act on to hopefully improve. I'm speeding 30% of the time, I need to improve on that. Our fleet average is 10%, so I'm one of the outliers, definitely should need to improve on that. And if I do improve on that, look, there's some rewards for me here as well, which is so from everything from the onboarding to the new drivers to every step, we need to win their trust. Continually win their trust, and I talk about like deliver genuine value as well. So there are a few fundamental things that we've done to develop a driver first safety solution and a treat of privacy as a feature. So one of the things we've said that we'll that the Bright Mile safety program will never report on the driver location to managers. Which is absolutely essential. So for those people that are looking for, I'm looking for a lightweight telematic solution, which is, you know, cheaper than the hardware solution, we're not that, because we're not going to tell you where your driver is. We're not going to tell you where your assets are. We're going to tell you trends over a period of time as well. The other thing that was really important, they understood that their performance is measured over a period of time, and a period of time being as opposed to rather than individual trips, on business trips as well, so rather than personal trips. And this really changes the tone of the conversation, and from our testing really kind of reduces defensive behavior as well. So when you say over a 14-day period of time you've been speeding, I don't know, 30% of the time, is very different to on that last trip you were speeding a fair bit. Well, I was speeding on that last trip a fair bit because I was put quite a lot of pressure to be on time on that job. Mm-hmm. Or whatever it is. And suddenly when you start talking about a trend over a period of time, and then talking about like a benchmark of, and this is how you compare to your cohort of people in your team, it really changes the conversation as well. The other thing that we've also really focused on is drivers having complete control in classifying what is a personal and a business trip as well, or a trip where they may be a passenger. So it's hard, you know, treating drivers like adults and saying, look, we trust you with that. Another thing that we've added as a feature, which is a driver activated privacy mode when drivers do not want to be tracked for a period of time, like they might be on holiday, or let's say on maternity leave, or a long absence from work for a variety of different reasons as well. And we've spoken about that it's important for drivers to be able to specify their working hours and their days for when we detect a trip, and we auto classify as a business trip as well.
And that's in driver's control, isn't it? Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. All of those, just giving all of those things in the driver's control as well. Now, obviously, it's really important to make sure that we also provide managers with a variety of tools that help them understand that the system's not being gamed, that there isn't a kind of an avoidance. And the manager portal does an amazing job of that, of saying, you know, Bob has been going into privacy mode 10% of the time, and the overall average for your organization is 0.6%. And these are the days, and these are things what he's doing. He's removing the app from his phone, or he's kind of going to privacy mode. So the once again, if there is anything that feels unusual, we can surface that, where there could be hopefully a healthy discussion in regards to just using the app correctly as well. And the other thing, awards for good driving behavior. Mm. So messaging something that we worked really hard on. In the early iterations of our app, we used languages like you are, you know, you're average at X, or you're poor at this, or you're good at this, and or even like tested league tables. And it was really finding the things that disengage drivers is really not hard. Of going, they've told me I'm poor at this, I don't believe in this application. So it's been really understanding what we have the permission to say, and that as a driver safety solution, which is an app that a driver has, and understanding the language that we need to use with them to keep them, you know, you just did a 40-mile journey. On that 40-mile journey, you had these behaviors, which you were speeding 4% of the time, you triggered, you know, these contextual risks, so there was some harsh acceleration. But of those 40 miles, you did 30 good miles. You did 30 miles where there was, you know, there was nothing that was that could be considered a risk. And here's 30 bright miles, which we're rewarding you for the good miles that you do. And even like in a weekly digest, we talk about the fact that, you know, you did 500 miles this week. You earned 350 bright miles for the good miles that you did. Go to the app to find out the things that you can do to improve on principles of gamification, rewards, positive reinforcement, the things that obviously there's been social media platforms and the zingers of this world have obviously been refining to make sure they keep us hooked. We talk about all these kind of things that we do to kind of like, from unlocking trophies to earning additional bright miles, which can then be used to enter into prize draws, win prizes, and some element of healthy competition as well. All of these things have been really, really important in terms of kind of building a driver first safety program as well, but then also providing the managers with the tools that they need to intervene if there are things that are deemed to be a risk to a driver, a risk to a cohort of drivers, where some form of intervention is required.
And there's actually an opportunity, if I remember rightly, there's an opportunity for businesses to link up with those prize draws, depending on how, I think, how they arrange their agreements with you guys, but so that their drivers can actually physically win some vouchers or something. It's not just like a token trophy on the app that says, well done, you're a great driver. It's actual prizes.
Exactly. You've just unlocked a trophy because you've had no distractions all day on your mobile phone today, and you've earned 200 Bright Miles. What you can do with those Bright Miles is you can enter monthly raffles to win Amazon vouchers, quarterly prizes to win experience days, which you might have to wait a few weeks to really do, to use. I don't know, a driver experience day, whatever that might be. You can donate them to charities. And those are all available as a part of the Bright Mile program. So that's everything that's, you know, we offer. What some of our customers are happy to do is also go above and beyond with offering additional prizes. So one of our customers in North America likes to do surprise and delight moments, which, you know, we check in with them on a fortnightly or monthly basis in terms of the health of the cohort of their drivers and talk about, these are the things you've got to celebrate. These are the things where there might be, these are the things that are a risk. Keep an eye, the trends that we're seeing, there's someone that's, and here is a driver that is the most improved driver this fortnight or this month. And let's, you know, and they go, great. Well, that's someone that's going to be getting a Starbucks voucher from us for X value as well. Or let's say, which just those kind of moments and those kind of celebrations of, yeah, that person still is not our best driver when it comes to distraction, but the improvement that they've made month on month on improving their distraction is something that we need to acknowledge and say, look, you're on the right path. You're on the right path for, you know, you've clocked 2,000 miles last month, and your mobile phone distraction for those is dramatically reduced. Still keep working on it because we want to see zero mobile distraction from you as well. But, you know, the A for effort.
And you referenced on that earlier, like, By the way, I feel like I should reiterate, I really like that kind of positive reinforcement side of things that you and your clients are doing. I think that is something that when we talk about safety, we miss out on. Just across the board, across the whole board, whether it's just driver safety or we're talking manual handling, you know, it is synonymous that our role as a safety professionals is, you've done this wrong, Adam, don't do that again, let me show you how to do it correctly. And like you say, when it comes to driving, we all think we're amazing. So me coming along and saying, Adam, you're a bad driver, it's not going to have the desired effect. It's probably going to have the opposite effect. So actually just positively encouraging and enforcing good behaviors by saying, hey, well done, you're not the best driver, but you've improved, here's some vouchers. It's like, bloody hell, I can get some vouchers, buy myself a, I don't know, a boombox. Or boombox, how old am I, boombox? buy yourself a Bluetooth speaker, there we go, I sound a bit more millennial now, a Bluetooth speaker with some voucher just from driving safety. For me, I think that was a great idea. That kind of gamification of it was huge. But the other thing I found quite interesting, and you've touched on it a few times there, is that portal for the managers. Because it's something I've come across the years, is like businesses, like you said earlier, they have these policies to say, right, we want you to put your phone in a boot so that you never go on it. Okay, that's fine. But then you look at a salesman who their KPI is you must never miss two phone calls from the same customer. Yeah. And you're like, hang on a minute, that KPI directly conflicts with the policy of telling them to put the phone in a boot. So it's like, it doesn't work. So I'll be interested to see if, like, you think that, like, the portal that you've got for your managers kind of informs the business on how to shape the kind of wider policies and KPIs of the business and how to manage and improve that. Do you get what I mean? To kind of reduce
the I know exactly what you mean. There's the kind of I believe it's Royal Mail that says you have to put your phone in the glove compartment. I've known of companies saying you have to switch off your phone, and you're absolutely right. And then you have the conflict, and your manager saying you have to be on that conference call because this is an absolutely essential deal that we need to get over the line. So
I've even had a head of a department on a conference call where driver safety was on the agenda, and he was driving whilst on the call.
Yeah.
And I was just messaging my colleagues like, wow, if you could ever get irony in one call, this would be it. Sorry, carry on. I didn't mean to
I think the kind of benchmarking and understanding it's a similar way to laws are made, isn't it? Which is when you you need to you go, we have a problem here, we have a certain behavior which we need to kind of have a policy around, because we and being able to understand what those what those problems are before actually something really bad happens, before a collision happens as a result of a distraction event, or a collision happens as a result of a fatigue event, is what we want to achieve. So you're absolutely right. There's some of the data that we provide should be able to inform better policy, and in terms of driver policy. And in fact, there are UK organisations which will be putting Bright Mile into their driver policy going forward, in terms of, and setting certain benchmarks which they hope to achieve as well. So the five things, I think this is a good segue into like, what do we measure, and what the industry is kind of, when it comes to driver safety, has been very much obsessed in what I call the kind of the ABC safety metrics, which is acceleration, braking, and cornering. So, we believe for the modern driver, it's really important to kind of extend that. And there's lots of solutions out there that go way beyond ABC, but I think ABC is the things that we've been, and then there might be insurance data that people put on top of that as well. So, acceleration is obviously bad, but harsh braking is obviously bad, but one of the things that we 3.5 years ago we spoke about is context is everything. Where am I accelerating? And being able to provide contextual risk data. So am I accelerating outside of a school crossing? Am I braking really hard as I come up to a set of traffic lights? And being able to use any of the kind of the road signage to be able to provide better coaching, really, rather than saying you were speeding on a motorway to saying you were speeding outside a school. All of that stuff really kind of and where are we seeing these our risk hotspots as an organization as well? Or we might find there's a cluster of these happen as we come out of a warehouse that we have in Newcastle upon Tyne, and actually there's some really important kind of obviously training that we need to do around this as well. Speeding, obviously, goes without saying. Percentage of time spent above a legal speed limit, so talking about the kind of the percentage. Distraction, what causes just so many, I think it was Focus Driven in the US that spoke about up to 80% of all crashes involve some form of driver distraction. Here what we're talking about is obviously specifically mobile phone distraction and interaction with that. So we measure and benchmark, which is a number of smartphone touches whilst driving as well, which can really inform an organization where they need to improve as well. Fatigue, something that is it's really interesting. Organizations measure things like idle time in a vehicle, someone's been parked outside, as you said, someone's been parked outside Starbucks for 45 minutes. Well, for all you know, they've been on a conference call closing the biggest ever deal of the company. I've been really, really kind of responsible. But fatigue, which is a measure of how long have you been driving without those required breaks as well. And just out of the box, we talk about kind of like taking a break every 2 hours, taking a 10-minute break. I think that's really important. And the other thing, which is I think where harsh acceleration is really important, is as I said, the context of your acceleration is really important, but harsh acceleration from a context of obviously the environment, eco as well, nothing kind of leads to greater battery consumption and fuel consumption than unnecessary incidents of harsh acceleration as well. So being able to measure these things and being able to report on these things and being able to understand where you need to train your cohort of drivers or how could that impact your policy. But also, once again, rather than having a broad brushstroke policy for, I don't know, you're a big organization with thousands of people who drive, but you have very, very different profiles of drivers. You have a delivery driver, you have a, I don't know, sales driver, and the things that you need from them and their driving behavior and their patterns could be quite different. So obviously being able to have certain nuances to your policy based on what you know about, let's say, a cohort of drivers in, and that might be regional behaviors, a big organization that we know that is, you know, talks about they're kind of their European cohort of drivers is completely different to their North African cohort of drivers and the challenges that they have. So subsequently talking about a global driver policy is potentially not relevant. One of the biggest obviously drinks companies, I was on a call with HSE leaders across the globe presenting Brightmile as a solution to them. And the challenges on the roads in West Africa are completely different to the challenges that we were talking about here in the UK, which is a case of like, and how can this data inform for you to better understand what those challenges are? Absolutely. And to be able to kind of like, rather than coming out with broad brushstroke, here's our global policy for driving across, I don't know, 120 territories, or let's say different cohorts of drivers, hopefully being able to kind of personalize it based on actually what are the challenges that we face. Definitely.
Definitely. A couple of things you said there. If you, they're kind of acting on averages and having that national or even international policy for everybody, you know, it just doesn't work. And an interesting book that, you know, anyone that listens to my podcast for moments, because I talk about this book all the time, but it blew my mind. But Rebel Ideas by Matthew Syed, it was just unbelievably eye-opening. So it's all about diversity, kind of like cognitive diversity. But there's some examples in there that I just think fit everything, and they just show how those kind of global procedures, those national procedures, you know, the classic stuff we see, especially in safety all the time. You know, I've decided in the head office in London how somebody in Scotland should be working. Doesn't work like that. And there's so many examples of things like that. There in America, there was the Air Force are basically having loads of crashes all the time, and basically someone did like a huge survey on it and had a look at everything, and the cockpits were based around average sizes. So they then measured every individual pilot in hundreds of them and whatever, and not one fit in that average, not one of them. So they then found out that it was the actual average cockpit size that they thought was the solution to make it fit everybody, didn't fit any of them, and was actually one of the main contributing factors to the crashes. So then they just made it adjustable, so pilots could get into their cockpit and adjust the seats, adjust the steering wheel equivalent, and on all of that stuff. And this is exactly what we do in every aspect of safety management. Is we don't make it adjustable. We say, you must do this, you must do that. We write risk assessments from our head office. We write driver safety policies from our head office, but it doesn't work for the way the salesman drives to the delivery driver. The delivery driver has, you know, 600 parcels to deliver in one day. And if he doesn't deliver them in one day, he's going to get his telling off. But it's like, but then you're going, boy, you're not driving very safe, are you? You're speeding. Well, yeah, that's because you want me to deliver 600 parcels a day. It's all of these conflicts and averages that just don't work. And you do have to kind of step back and have a look at this stuff.
What I would also say is, but, you know, it comes back to one of the questions which you said, which is this all too much for a business? Yeah. And we talk about people that are incredibly busy here as well, who are kind of like juggling so many different things, and usually sometimes under resourced as well. And words like personalization and customization, just seem like so much effort as well. So, and that, and I think that's, and I think that becomes really hard. But then actually, which is a case of potentially empowering people on the ground to be able to, a manager to be able to kind of have a certain degree of flexibility with saying, this is what is right for my cohort of employees who are driving. But it, once again, it's easier said than done. Really is,
I think a lot of it comes down to trust. I think there's a lack of trust in the, and I'm speaking mostly around UK businesses, but there seems to be a lack of trust for the people we employ. Like, you know, and again, this is referenced in that same book, but you know, we employ, why are we employing Adam, for example? He's really innovative, he's bringing loads of fresh ideas, and I can't wait for Adam to come in and get some fresh eyes on the business. Adam's first day, right, Adam, here's a book of policies and procedures of how you must behave and how you must work. It's, well, there's all that innovation. Innovation's gone out the window. That, you know, we have to trust the people we employ. If we're employing managers, we've got to trust them to be a manager, because that's what we employed them to do, in my opinion. So, Adam, if people like what Brightmire was saying, that, you know, they like the sound of it, they're thinking, well, okay, I like this. I'm going to get Brightmire into my company. I want to talk to Adam. I want to talk to someone at Brightmire. Get the app, for example. How do we go about doing that? And what does that kind of process look like?
I'd say the proof is in the pudding. It's really, really important. So for anyone who'd like to experience Brightmire, who'd like to trial Brightmire, who'd like to see how we, I think there's a, you know, there's a value promise here, isn't there, which is a case of, we're going to make your drivers safer, we're going to provide them with a solution that they're going to enjoy using. So you need to see the driver, but we're also going to provide you with a portal which is going to provide you with really useful, actionable insights where you can reduce the risk for your business. So the most important thing is for people to get in touch with me and go, look, I've got a cohort of drivers or that we'd love to trial this with. And I think that's really important that we deliver on that value promise as well. So get in touch with me and my team. I'd say for specifically for the podcast, drop me an email. It's adam.hawes@brightmire.io, or inquiries at Brightmire as well, or just visit our website and just drop me a note there as well. And it would be my absolute pleasure to get either a cohort of your drivers onto the app, experiencing it and getting first-hand feedback as well. So, and if anyone wants to know more about it, would like to see a kind of a fully-fledged demo of the app and the portal as well, or wants to, you know, even wants to have a, I'd say, a virtual coffee at this moment in time to challenge some of our, there'll be HSE leaders who will go, look, these are all great ideas, but here's my personal experiences as well. I love that. Please, you know, there's a few things that we say that are intentionally provocative in this space as well. This will not work for our cohort of drivers for these particular reasons as well. I'll never forget, there was a scaffolding business that I was having a conversation with. He said, driving is the least of my concern. I'm trying to stop these guys from making an absolute mess in front of people's houses, let alone, you know, it's just kind of like these it was just a case of his, as far as he was concerned, how they were behaving in the vehicle was the bottom of his list of challenges at that particular moment in time. So would love to have a conversation with anyone who'd like to discuss this and obviously find out more about our viewpoint and how we're going about hopefully moving the needle for more and more businesses.
Awesome. I like that. And we'll put all the links and your emails and website, et cetera, in the description for everyone as well. So, Adam, I quite enjoyed that chat. Thank you very much.
Likewise. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to Alex from Brightmire. You can download the app. I've downloaded it, but you know, it's corporates and stuff like that. But if you're interested, I've got all the links in the description below. You can have a chat with Alex on LinkedIn or go through their website, etc. And maybe install Brightmire in your business and kind of have a better fleet management system, be safer, be more empathetic on our roads. It'd be such a nice place, wouldn't it, if we drove all a bit safer. Crazy amount of people. Oh, for fuck's sake! Colin. Well, I'm literally recording an intro for my podcast. You've just ruined it.
Oh, man.
Say hello.
Hello. Put it in there. Make sure you put it in.
I'm going to put it in because that's like annoying that I didn't turn my phone on silent.
I'm so sorry, mate.
That's all right. Catch you later.
See you tomorrow, buddy.
Bye. What?
You're not going to take the call?
Yeah, I just took it. I spoke to him and just said, you just interrupted my podcast. And he said, I'll make sure you put this in the podcast. So I got to say hello to the camera. I'm still recording now. Yeah, I took it. He said he rang me by mistake. I'm talking to him tomorrow. I booked him. 3 o'clock. Anyway, I'm recording. Fuck off. Jesus Christ. What? Go on then. You don't have to whisper.
Do you remember
no one actually here, I can cut this.
Do you remember where we put the hats and mittens?
Hats and mittens.
Baby hats and baby mittens.
We put the hats and mittens in the blue bag on the top shelf.
No,
the door.
Baby ones.
Oh, the baby ones.
I can't find them anywhere.
It'd be in one of those cupboards or drawers.
I've looked in there.
Oh.
Carry on.
I have no idea where I was on this outro. Yeah, well, the whole podcast is about driving safer, so no shit. Yes, wouldn't it be nice if the roads were just much safer and we were all a bit more empathetic when driving? That was what I was saying before I was rudely interrupted by Colin from the Interest in Safety podcast. Go and check him out. And my wife from the Rebranding Safety podcast. So go check Rebranding Safety out, which you already are. Anyway, right. This is getting painful now. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you did enjoy it, leave us a rate and review because we really appreciate that. And most people that listen to this podcast do it. And you don't want to be that one person that doesn't do it. So please do it. Nothing to do with, you know, algorithms or anything. What else do you need to do? If you're on Spotify, hit the follow button. If you're on YouTube, hit subscribe. These are all, I'll be writing these down. What else do you need to do? If you've got one person you can think of that will benefit from this episode, maybe they drive a bit like a dick, you could share this with them. Or maybe you drive a bit like a dick, you can just share it with yourself. Either way, if you do that, tag us on the old social, Safety Rebranded, or Rebranding Safety on any of the others. So Twitter, Safety Rebranded, and Rebranding Safety on LinkedIn and Facebook. Make sure you hit us up, let us know what you're doing. Otherwise, I'll catch you in the next podcast. Safe.